Beyond the Dark on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's talk to a paranormal investigator and a writer. Let's speak to Malcolm Robertson. Hello, Malcolm.
Hello there.
The first thing I've got to ask you about, I believe you were once attacked by a ghost.
Yes, that's very true. Simply because I've put myself into the ballpark, so to speak, of, you know, haunted houses and environments where paranormal events happen, then I have been, you know, I've had some strange things happen to me. On one occasion, we were in this house doing an investigation, and we were sitting quietly in the room with all the lights off, the recording equipment going, etc. And then suddenly, you know, I had my hair pulled very, very violently, and there were nothing round about me, absolutely nothing there. On other cases, I've had my face slapped, I've been kicked. Now, that's not, you know, it's not the norm in many investigations by other researchers. It's very rare, I must admit, it's very rare. But when that happens to you and there's nobody there, then you do tend to get frightened for sure, yeah.
Tell me who Malcolm Robertson is.
Well, I've been interested in the strange world of UFOs, ghosts and paranormal for many, many years. I guess, you know, it started off as a small boy when I was growing up in central Scotland in a little town called Alloa. And I initially thought, you know, that there were no such things as ghosts, there were no such things as UFOs, etc. These things couldn't be. They just couldn't be. As I grew older, I started to read books on ghosts. And later on in life, I started to really, really get interested in the paranormal. My parents took us up to Loch Ness for our summer holidays, and maybe I'll come back to that in a moment. But as I grew up, I just felt this burning desire to really get my hands dirty here and find out if there were any validity, any truth to these accounts. And in 1979, I started up my own society in Scotland entitled Strange Phenomena Investigations. And the bottom line there is that, you know, we do not hold or, you know, any preconceived ideas as to the nature of the events of which we research. We must keep that open mind because the vast majority of paranormal happenings, UFO sightings, can easily be explained away. It's a small percent which it's like the fly in the ointment, if you like. It just won't seem to go away. And this is what drives myself and my colleagues worldwide to try and get some answers.
What interests you most, UFOs and the phenomena out there or the paranormal?
I must admit, I mean, although probably I'm better known for my UFO research and more so in regards to the ongoing UFO sightings in Bonnybridge, a little town in Stirlingshire in central Scotland, my main heart, I must admit, does lie in the paranormal. It's spending those nights in haunted rooms, haunted castles, haunted buildings. And it's just an unbelievable experience, you know, and you're trying to get some footage or audio tape recordings. But we're living in the Steven Spielberg age of DreamWorks Laboratory, where anything can be manipulated onto computer to look like a ghost, to look like a UFO. And so it's so easy to manufacture false, images. But thankfully, that same technology can be applied to see if it's a little string holding up a model of a UFO or if it's a paste on a window or something. So the technology can work both ways. But the thing we have to remember is, I mean, what does constitute that evidence? Is it a good photograph? Is it a good piece of video footage? I think when you speak to those people who truly, truly have been touched by the paranormal, they've not been on drugs and, you know, they've not been, you know, under the influence of alcohol or anything like that, they will tell you, look, I saw what I saw and nobody will tell me different. But it's all about perception. You know, we laughed at John Logie Baird and his inventions, Marconi would be set foot on the moon. We have to understand that science is ever progressing, ever evolving, and we shouldn't laugh what today's science fiction may be tomorrow's science fact. We have to keep that open mind.
I think, Malcolm, in this day and age, though, people can be a lot more open-minded about it. I mean, I'm an older man, and years ago, people would have locked you away for some of the thoughts that people have these days. So I think we're living in a society now and an age where a lot of people believe in the hereafter, the paranormal and UFOs, and why not?
Yeah, absolutely. You're dead correct. You're right. I mean, there is this growing interest now. Sky Television and all the Sky channels have opened up a plethora of various shows on the paranormal, which is a good thing, because prior to all that, the BBC and the ITN networks here in the UK was very, very one-sided in their presentation of the paranormal. But thankfully, that's changing now, and we are seeing a lot of good shows, etc. And a lot of the younger generation are showing an interest in this as well, which is great. I mean, when I started off, there were hardly any societies here in the United Kingdom. And now, you know, there's quite a substantial amount all doing good work. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's things are marching on for sure.
I'm talking to Malcolm Robertson, who has written UFO Case Files of Scotland, Paranormal Case Files of Great Britain. But I've got to mention this now, the famous Loch Ness Monster. I really, really, truly, Malcolm, want him to be real.
Yes, I'm pretty sure. So does a lot of your listeners as well. I mean, let's be honest here, it goes way back into antiquity, sightings of Nessie, and indeed sightings of other lake monsters and loch monsters around the world. Let's not forget that. But for me, as I said earlier, as a young boy going up in Scotland, I was fascinated, absolutely fascinated by my father telling me these tales of this water kelpie. We call it in Scotland a kelpie or a water beastie. And like anything else in life, when we went up to Loch Ness, we went on one of the pleasure cruise ships that traverses the 24 miles of Loch Ness. And just this feeling that something was lurking under the water was enough to captivate my young inquiring mind. As the years rolled on, I then camped out on the shores of Loch Ness in a flimsy tent on many a wild night, and I started to interview many of the locals around Loch Ness, one of which was Alex Campbell. He was the former water bailiff on Loch Ness, and he was the very, very first man who, way back in 1934, let the public at large know what he saw. He was the first man to report Nessie. And he said to me in an interview before he died that the loch was like a sheet of glass. Not a ripple, not any movement at all. And then suddenly this long tapering neck came out of beneath the surface of Loch Ness with a sheep-like head, this small sheep-like head, and it was moving about and it just tumbled back into the water again. Another gentleman, Father Gregory Brucey, a monk, a Benedictine monk at Fort Augustus Abbey on the shores of Loch Ness, a man of the cloth, he saw Nessie, the same type of thing, funnily enough, this long neck and this sheep-like head coming out from beneath the surface of Loch Ness and moving about for a few seconds and cascading back into the depths of Loch Ness again. I mean, people say, you know, but even the best people can be fooled, you know, even police officers, pilots, etc. They can make mistakes as well, we know that. But having said that, this man had lived in the Benedictine Abbey for many, many years at Loch Ness. He's seen Loch Ness under all conditions, and he said, no, what I saw, I saw. I definitely saw a creature of some description, for sure.
Malcolm, why can we never find him then?
Yeah, possibly because it's not an air-breathing animal. It's an accidental breaking of the loch surface. Perhaps, we could speculate, that it's feeding on the fish, which are about 3 or 4 feet beneath the top surface of Loch Ness. And as it's coming up, it's breaking the loch surface with its back or its neck accidentally. So it's not an air-breathing animal. And, I mean, Steven Spielberg was going to assist me some years ago to capture Loch Ness, and that's a story as well.
You've just stumped me there. You just threw Steven Spielberg in.
Yeah, I mean, well, very briefly, what happened there was I took a phone call at my home in Scotland from the Scottish newspaper, and he says, Malcolm, if you could prove the existence of Nessie, how would you go about it? And funnily enough, at that time, I had devised this this device which possibly could capture and trap Nessie. Now, if you and your listeners can imagine in your mind's eye a boxing ring, you know, the ropes, etc.
Yeah.
Now, on those, this only would be much, much bigger, maybe half the size of a playing field, a soccer field, and it's secreted down in the bottom of Loch Ness. Now, on these ropes, if you can imagine what a grenade looks like, similar to a grenade, but little spikes. Now, these would be radio biopsy darts, tranquilizing darts. Inside this boxing ring type effect would be this machine which constantly is turning out this kind of fish puree, this kind of fish food kind of stuff. And there would be cables going up to the top of Loch Ness which would have lights. So any big body pushing against those ropes would be like pulling a pin on a hand grenade. Boof, boof, boof. All these radio biopsy darts would bang, 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 throw out and, you know, all directions into the body of this creature. It would then neutralize it, you know, tranquilize it, and it would just steadily fall to the loch floor. The lights would then, because these ropes had been pushed, the lights would circle at the loch's surface, alerting divers in their boats to dive down and capture the creature. So, to cut a long story short, this reporter took this story. We ran it in all the Scottish newspapers. It made headlines here in the UK and overseas. And Steven Spielberg got in touch with the newspaper and says, you know what? I'm quite happy to put the money up for this Mr. Robinson's device.
Wow.
And that was all fine and dandy, but sadly, Spielberg went on to make other movies and the idea fell through and it just didn't happen. But to this day, I still believe that, you know, this device would certainly prove Nessie once and for all.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Of your two books, which one do you enjoy most? The Paranormal Case Files of Great Britain or the UFO Case Files of Scotland?
Well, I would have to say both, but I'm not going to say both. I'm going to bend the rules and say number two, The Paranormal Case Files of Great Britain. The first book, The UFO Case Files of Scotland, these contain the top six best cases, best UFO sightings in Scotland. Low-level, close proximity cases. Cases, it's not just little lights in the sky. It could be Chinese lanterns, you know, set off at barbecues, etc. None of that. Stuff-in-your-face cases. A really classic book on low-level cases. And, of course, the ghost book was a culmination of over 35 years' work travelling the British Isles, chapping on doors, spending nights in haunted houses and castles, and getting all this stuff out to the public. Because it's no good, you know, collecting all these wonderful tales of paranormal ghostly encounters and filing them away in a locked filing cabinet. They've got to see the light of day. But, I'm working my third book's with my publisher at the moment. I'm working on a fourth book as well, and I'm involved in a movie on one of Scotland's biggest UFO cases as well. So quite a lot's happening, quite a lot.
Why are we so fascinated with UFOs? I mean, to me, and I've always thought this, that how dare we think that we're the only creatures in this vast galaxy of planets?
Yeah, absolutely. Never a truer word has been said. If you can imagine a beach, planet Earth is just a tiny grain of sand on this huge cosmic beach. Now, I'll be honest, and your listeners, a number of whom may well be sceptical, and that's absolutely fine, people will quite rightly say, okay, you know, we've got this lots and lots of really good UFO cases, Malcolm, but why aren't they here? Why aren't they chapping on the door of 10 Downing Street or over in America, you know, White House, etc.? This is the million-dollar question for me as a researcher, why we can't answer it. What angers me is the UFO abductions, the taking of people. This is taking it to a new ballpark, this one. Taking people out of their own friendly home environment, sometimes even a car. And I'll come back to a story in a moment about that one. And subjecting them to some form of medical or clinical examination. Very, very traumatizing for those involved. It happens not here only in the UK, but we know America, Canada, Brazil, Venezuela, all over the place. Either humankind is suffering from some form of global psychosis that's affecting everybody, or some, not all, some of these cases are the real McCoy, the real deal. Other researchers have speculated that maybe it's like a smacks of Star Trek, I'm sorry, but this is what people are saying, that maybe it's some form of genetic experimentation to repopulate a dying planet. I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it sounds a wee bit too far-fetched for me. But it's like anything else in life. Never, ever throw the baby out with the bathwater just because something looks and sounds ridiculous. Doesn't mean to say that it is so. You know, we may laugh at things, but who knows? But you're right. I mean, at the end of the day, they're not denying the sightings. 95% of all UFO reports can easily be explained away. 5% that's left, the 3% of the 5 are probably our own black budget technology. The stealth aircraft was flying in America 10 years before the American military machine put their hands up to the American people and says, you know what, it's ours. And that gave rise to so many false UFO reports. You've got unmanned aerial vehicles that look suspiciously like flying saucers, etc. So, you know, a fair deal of these sightings may be our own technology. I'm pretty sure they are. But leaves 2%. 1% may be a new and as yet atmospheric phenomena, something akin to ball lightning. But the 1% remains for me, after 35 years of speaking to people, doing interviews, seeing UFOs myself, I believe that we are dealing with some form of non-human intelligence. It may not necessarily be extraterrestrial. It could be interdimensional. They could be already here. There's so many sightings of UFOs being seen coming out of and into the oceans of this planet. It goes on.
Interesting you say that. We interviewed somebody recently that said that there are people or beings living on this planet who are from another planet. Have you a thought on that?
I can only speculate because I only like talking about things that I've had my hands on, that I've done myself, that I've done the research on. And then I can say from the heart, you know what, this is how it is. Haven't researched any what they call USOs, unidentified submersible objects. I'm well aware of the vast literature out there that attests to the sightings of these craft coming mostly from the island of Puerto Rico, in and out of the waters there. Again, it would seem to be the case that this could well be true, but I don't know. I've not researched any of these particular sightings to give a perfect answer on that one.
As somebody who is a paranormal investigator and a writer, do you get angry at the amount of people that maybe are jumping in on the bandwagon who are phony and really are just making a living out of nothing?
Absolutely. Of course, yeah. I mean, it angers me when you read some of the tabloid papers here in the UK. You go to the end of the paper and it's all these psychic hotlines and dial Madge for your fame, luck and fortune. My goodness me, give me a break. You know, I think it's some old housewife, you know, sitting at the end of the phone darning a jersey or something, knitting a jersey and just saying what people want to hear. Yes, I do think there's a lot of people who really wish for it to be true and making money out of it. And we have to be very, very careful of that because my remit, if I can unmask any fraudulent mediums, people who are phony, out to, you know, pull the wool over your eyes, I will shout it from the highest rooftop because although I believe in life after death, I've studied near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, I will shout from the rooftops if anybody I believe is a fake and a phony, and we've got to unmask these people for sure.
Malcolm, why did you write Paranormal Cases, Case Files of Great Britain, when Scotland must be awash with stories?
Yeah, absolutely. It is awash with stories. Well, for that matter, many countries are, let's be honest. But Britain, the British Isles, is renowned for its ghostly castles and stately homes and mansions and history and battlefields and murder and intrigue. And what people have to realise is there's not just one aspect of a ghost. People think of ghosts as transparent. You have ghosts that's solid, you would pass them in the street. You've got ghosts that will stop, see the table in front of it and move away from it rather than go through it. You've got ghosts that are aware of you, that are not aware of you. You've got crisis ghosts. And a quick, for instance, on what is called a crisis ghost. During the Second World War, this elderly lady, was in her home in Tottenham, in North London. And she said, suddenly, this picture evolved, this image evolved in the corner of the room, of her living room. In this picture, she said, was her son, and she saw him flailing about in the ocean. Now, her son was fighting the Nazi U-boat menace in the Atlantic, and his ship had been torpedoed by a U-boat, and he was tossed into the sea. And it was like his last moment of earth was thinking about his mother. And somehow, to this day we don't know how, this image appeared in this woman's living room of her son flailing about in the icy cold Atlantic before he slipped away and died. Nice story. Is there any validity to that? It's one person's claims. But that one person touches on to another person and another, and all these stories must mean something, and it's quite interesting, yeah.
Where, tell me, in your opinion and with your travels, where's the most haunted place in the British Isles? Is there one place that you actually would not like to go back to?
There's a lot of towns in England. The town of Pluckley is one of the most haunted towns of England. But again, a lot of towns claim to be that. York, for instance, as well. Probably one of the most scariest things I've seen, just to deviate slightly from your question, was this woman who says, Malcolm, would you like to see dead people? Now, there's a request you don't get every day. To cut a long story short, we went up to this lady's home in London, and she says, what it is, Malcolm, we have this chap comes in, spirit take him over. We put him behind this black curtain. All this sounds suspicious, you know, but I'll come to that. And it's in the back bedroom. He sits in this chair. We tie him to this chair with Velcro straps, just like in the old Victorian seances. They put these mediums in what's known as a cabinet. Anyway, we strapped him, this fella, to the chair, pulled the cover over him. I was absolutely sure that I checked his person, his body, his legs, his shoes, no hidden devices of any shape or form. And then we turned the lights off. There was about three or four of us sitting facing him behind the curtain, and you could see his feet sticking out of the bottom of the curtain. There was one small red light, ambient light, which was pervading the blackness of the room, which was sufficient enough to see the outlines of the people in the room. And then suddenly this lady had these little silver bells on the walls, and they started to tinkle, tinkle, tinkle. Nobody was near them. There was not any air coming into the room. There was no windows in, and they were tinkling. And then suddenly all these voices, male, female, elderly, young, coming from all over the room, behind you, under your chair, everywhere. And I'm still thinking, even though I believe in life after death, saying, okay, who's throwing their voice here? This cannot be true. This is just too marvellous. This is too great. What's going on here? And then it stopped. And then suddenly the small chest of drawers, which was next to the cabinet, we call it a cabinet, it's just a black curtain. The psychic was behind us, as I said. He was in trance. He was being taken over. And the small chest of drawers started to wobble. And I saw there was sufficient light in the room to see it. And then it rose several inches up into there, rose further up into there, and started moving across the room. The small chest of drawers, nobody was to the left of it. Nobody was to the right of it. There were no wires, pulleys, trapdoors, you name it. It was coming. It was incredible. And it just, boof, it fell on my toes. And this spirit voice boomed out in the room. was Mr. Robinson impressed by this? It wow. sounds crazy, but this is what happened. And I said, yeah, I'd be even more impressed if you took this chest of drawers back to where it was. And then the spirit voice came out, we shall see what we can do. Now, I did the cardinal sin. I did what you're not meant to do in any of these psychic environments. I tried to stop psychic phenomena by happening. So what I did was I got my finger and I tucked it into the top of this drawer, just underneath the top part of the drawer, mm-hmm. and I says, this thing is going nowhere. 1 minute went by, nothing, and then suddenly this chest of drawers started to wobble again. Nobody was near it, hand on heart, seriously. And then suddenly I couldn't pull it back. It was trying to move. I could not pull it back, and it just floated up into the middle of the room and went right back to the firewall and boom, fell on there. Now, it's things like that I would love the BBC and the ITN cameras and your David Copperfields and all these professional magicians to come in and say, guys, I saw this. How is it done? If this is a trick, show me how it's done. It's amazing. Because we know that, you know, David Copperfield made the Statue of Liberty disappear, an illusion, a Lear jet disappear. So I'm well aware that your eye can be deceived, and I mention that in all my lectures. But that was quite scary, I can tell you.
How do they find your books? Because you are a fascinating man.
Well, basically, if you go on to the website of my publisher, which is www.healingsofatlantis.com, and you'll find my books available there. I'm also the assistant editor of the world's biggest UFO magazine entitled UFO Matrix. That's on sale here in the UK. It's on sale in Brazil, Singapore, Japan, Hong Kong, Australasia, and America. I'm also speaking at our own conference in Pontefract in October. All these details your listeners will find on our website. It's the 50 years of UFO abduction conference. We have Travis Walton, a very well-known UFO abductee coming over from the United States. He's given a lecture on his personal abduction. I'll be talking to the audience about Scotland's biggest UFO abduction, the A70 case. It's going to be one heck of a show, and I do hope that your listeners can, you know, go to that website, get all the details, and try and attend. Yeah.
Any chance of you coming down this way further?
I'll go for it wherever anybody wants.
All right. Malcolm, you're fascinating. What is the website again?
It's www.healingsofatlantis.com, and it's a wonderful website. Dave and Amanda, who made it all happen, wonderful people. And again, at the end of the day, it's just to educate the people. People must make up their own mind. Have a wee look at what's out there. Yes, there's a lot of nonsense, of course there is, but like a big sieve, get rid of all that nonsense, and your listeners and your good self, I'm pretty sure, will be impressed by what remains.
Malcolm, what's the magazine again that's on sale at WH Smith's?
It's a UFO Matrix, and if any of your listeners want to Google that, put that in Google, UFO Matrix, you'll find all the details there as well.
Malcolm Robinson, thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure, it really has.
Liverpool's biggest after-hours talk show, Late Night City, with Pete Price, on Radio City 96.7 and City Talk 105.9.